Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And now a debate about how low low-paid workers' wages should be. On Friday, City Council Speaker Christine Quinn finally introduced a living wage bill. People have been waiting for the final version for months, under which certain businesses that get more than $1 million in city subsidies would have to pay at least $10 an hour with health benefits or $11.50 without to their workers. Meanwhile, in Albany, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver has been trying to pass a minimum wage hike, the regular old minimum wage, from $7.25 an hour to $8.50 an hour. Arguing in favor of both wage increases is Paul Sahn, the legal co-director of the National Employment Law Project. Arguing against is Nicole Gelinas, contributing editor to the Manhattan Institute's City Journal. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC.
Thank you,
Brian. Good morning, Brian.
And Nicole, let's start in Albany. How does raising the minimum wage hurt minimum wage workers? How is that an argument on behalf of workers?
Well, there's a few problems here. One is that the minimum wage would be higher than it is in a neighboring state, New Jersey, which means we have a competition problem. As Mayor Bloomberg has said, although he's changed his mind on this issue as well a couple times, it is better to have national policy that sets a higher tax rate if that is what one wants, a higher minimum wage rate and so forth. Otherwise, you have states competing against each other. And so that is one problem. Another problem is that they would index the minimum wage to inflation. This could easily cause a wage price spiral unique to one state, where if we have a period of high inflation, something that we haven't had in a while, so people have forgotten the risk, suddenly employers, when they are already suffering a decrease in business, higher commodities costs and so forth, are going to have to pay their employees more. That means they're going to cut back. That means in high inflation, high unemployment, you exacerbate that cycle and push up unemployment. So you certainly don't want it indexed to the inflation rate. And the last point, before I let Paul have his say, is that this is not, you mentioned that it's similar to the rent regulation argument, and you said that tenants can kind of rest easy. Well, a random number of tenants who are lucky enough to have these apartments can rest easy. Everybody else is stuck competing for a limited supply. Same thing with minimum wage hike. If you want to help the poor, helping a random collection of employees, most of whom are not poor and are not the sole wage earners in their households, is not the way to go about it. We have programs like the Earned Income Tax Credit and so forth that are much better targeted toward the social policy of helping people with children.
All right. So, Paul, three arguments on the table right away against raising the minimum wage. How about that last one, that most of the people earning the minimum wage are not poor and not the sole wage earners in their households?
Well, that argument really turns on a sleight of hand. The definition of poor, the poverty line, is really an outdated measure of hardship, of need. And so most of the people below the poverty line actually aren't working much at all. You if you're working full-time at minimum wage, you get up to the poverty line. So it's the real test is whether most of the people, low-wage workers in New York State, are struggling. And wages have been flat and falling. You know, New York's minimum wage is laughably low. It's $7.25. It's gone up 10 cents in the last 6 years. It would be almost $11 an hour if it kept pace with rising cost of living. And New York is way behind other states. 18 states, including a lot of low-cost Sun Belt states, have higher minimum wages. Several are neighbor states. You know, in Washington, Oregon, the minimum wage is almost $9 an hour. And this New York really has a higher cost of living, ought to have a higher wage. And in fact, you know, this problem of the neglect of our minimum wage is really becoming more and more serious because our economy is shifting faster towards low-wage jobs. During the recession really exacerbated this. We lost a lot of mid-wage jobs in manufacturing, construction. The job growth since then has really disproportionately been in the low-wage jobs.
Then what about Nicole's argument that there would be a war across state lines if New York's minimum wage is hiked above that of New Jersey? Then people will set up their minimum wage paying businesses more across the Hudson.
Well, so the short answer to that is sort of what Crane's New York Business, which is one of a raft of business publications that have editorialized in favor of the minimum wage, somewhat surprisingly said, which is that they recognize that most low-wage jobs are service jobs tied to their location, and there's very little state, you know, interstate competition. And generally, Ms. Galinas's research is about 15 years out of date. There's been a real sea change in the economics, the research on the minimum wage over that period, and the most rigorous research shows really conclusively that higher minimum wages do not result in job loss. And you know that we could go into a debate on the details, you know, later if you're interested in that. But it's what's led a really surprising and diverse range of political voices, from Michael Bloomberg to Bloomberg News to even Mitt Romney, to recognize that raising the minimum wage makes sense.
Let's stay on that for just a minute, and then I want to get to the living wage bill, which is different. But very briefly, this is probably the argument against the minimum wage that we hear the most commonly, which is that if a business has only X dollars to spend on wages and the wage per hour is higher, then they will hire fewer people and there will be more unemployment. I'll get you each on this very briefly. Paul, you first.
So the answer there is just that the real world workers aren't widgets, and so the simple supply and demand model doesn't work that way. Workers, and this has been borne out by the research, which has found imperceptible decreases in employment from minimum wage increases. You know, the explanation for why that is, part of the higher cost is offset by reduced turnover and other savings to the employer. Some of it's absorbed in slight price increases. But the key thing is that ultimately the cost of low-wage labor is a really tiny factor in hiring decisions and job growth for low-wage industries. Overwhelmingly, it's consumer demand and market growth. And you see this in all the polls of business owners, and that's what's holding the economy back, is weak consumer demand. And in fact, perhaps counterintuitively, the minimum wage actually is a job creator, not on a huge scale, but it pumps money into the pockets of working families that spend it on local businesses. I mean, the proposed New York increase is estimated to create perhaps 7,500 new jobs across the state because of that stimulus effect.
Nicole, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's two problems. The one you mentioned, and this is particularly true at the margins of ours, where if you've got family-owned businesses, particularly outside of New York City, where the wage increase makes a bigger difference, you'll have business owners, family members deciding to do more of the work themselves and try to cut the hourly costs of the employees. And the other problem is the mix of applicants that you get for jobs. The higher the minimum wage, the more you get people who are more educated, students looking for part-time work, homemakers looking to get into the workforce part-time, and they've got more experience and credentials. It makes it more worth their while, and so they're kind of crowding out the younger people with less experience who might otherwise be the only competition for these jobs. And that's particularly true in this economic environment, where we already have much more competition than we used to for these jobs. You're making it even harder for the person just trying to get his or her first job and work their way up the ladder.
Nicole Gelinas from the Manhattan Institute, Paul Sahn from the National Employment Law Project, as they are debating the two bills now in New York legislatures having to do with wages. They've been just talking about the minimum wage bill being debated in Albany. Now the New York City living wage bill. Paul Sahn, what's in the final bill and do you support it? This has been in flux.
It is. It's a... The final bill would require that businesses that get substantial economic development tax breaks and grants from the city to guarantee that their direct employees and their service contractors and concessionaires, in the case of businesses like the Yankees that build stadiums, things of that sort, that they pay a very modest living wage. It's the current living wage level in the city is only $10 an hour. It's very, very modest. And
would be $10 an hour required if it includes health benefits, $11.50 without health benefits.
That's correct. That's correct. And there's been a lot of coverage of the politicking and who's winning, who's losing as this proposal has worked its way through the city council. But the key thing to keep in mind is New York has really been a laggard in refocusing its economic development agency on creating decent jobs for low-income New Yorkers. And other cities have been far ahead. The combined effect of the new living wage bill and the prevailing wage bill for janitors that you may have followed that was passed by the council about a month ago will finally focus New York's economic development programs on creating decent jobs. And other cities have been doing this very successfully. Los Angeles is the leader, and the way they do it is it's not magic. When they're building a mall, they focus on recruiting the businesses like Costco or the Container Store that operate profitably while paying living wages. And you know, New York has for too long just been subsidizing bad jobs with taxpayer money.
And that's not in this bill. That was an issue in the Kingsbridge Armory dust up, and it's not a requirement that the retail shops that move into a development that's getting city subsidies also pay the living wage, right?
You're right. The final bill does not require that. Instead, it mandates the living wage for the direct recipients and their contractors, which is what many of the other major cities like L.A. do. And then they negotiate on a project-by-project basis for living wage goals for the tenants.
Okay. So again, Nicole Gelinas, why not? For people who think this is a reasonable social contract, if the taxpayers are subsidizing a business as profitable as, say, the Yankees, to then at least require that they pay a living wage of $10 an hour to their employees.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought this up. This is far more egregious than the minimum wage. I mean, we have a minimum wage. Raising it a little bit, you'll put aside the indexing it to inflation, it's not the end of the world. But here, 80% of the problem with this bill is the city subsidies themselves. The city and the state should not be picking and choosing businesses that they want to succeed in the city. It means, first of all, there's the potential for corruption. It also gets more money into politics, which a lot of people don't like. And you're punishing businesses that are not politically connected. And it's just a waste of money. You know, the Fresh Direct hearing a couple of months ago, you have Fresh Direct threatening to move to New Jersey unless they get this city subsidies. It's ridiculous. They're not going to New Jersey. Their customers are here. Their trucks would be sitting in the tunnels for hours every single day.
And Fresh Direct got an exemption from this, as have lots of others.
Yes, and that's another problem. Again, it goes to picking and choosing. The problem with having living wage connected to city subsidies is, A, it will push the city subsidies up. Taxpayers are paying for that. And B, it's kind of a solution in search of a problem. These are, you know, again, as you said, the retail workers who are really the low-wage workers, particularly outside of Manhattan, they're not going to be paying the living wage. The skilled construction jobs pay far above the minimum wage, at least when you have legal workers paid on the books, which is a separate problem. And that's why this is only going to impact a few hundred people. And by the way, it's an example of what's wrong with the Democratic Party in New York City. And on the political side, this shows voters, you know, this is just the same collection of Democrats who would rather focus on social engineering than on what people are really worried about, which is crime and noise and the cost of living. And so it shows you why these guys are going to have a very hard time winning. If they're kind of ticking off their boxes, how do I make the real estate industry happy on one hand and the low-wage advocates happy on the other? This is not how to win an election.
And so, case in point, Nicole, Mayor Bloomberg has said he would veto this living wage bill, although it appears that city council probably has enough votes to override. But it's being championed by Christine Quinn, the council speaker, who wants to be the next mayor.
Yes, exactly. And this is what you get when you balance two special interests off of one another without really thinking of the general interest in the city. And voters can see that. You know, unless things change significantly over the next year, none of the people supporting this is going to be the next mayor.
Well, who do you have in mind? There's no Michael Bloomberg, Rudy Giuliani out there, is there? We'll see. We'll come back to that conversation. But, Paul San, we have a minute left.
So the key problem that both of these bills respond to is the growth of low-wage jobs in the state. And there are, you know, I think we all know that it's this scenario. There are a lot of families where construction workers on the bench being supported by his wife, the home health aide, the machinist who lost his job is working at Home Depot. And these low wages, they're hurting working families in New York, but they're also holding back the economy. We need to promote higher wages. And I think one of the most welcome things we've seen with this go-around with the minimum wage bill is it feels like the beginning of the depoliticization of it with Business voices like Bloomberg, like News, Crane's New York Business, Mayor Bloomberg supporting the increase. And so I think all eyes are really on the governor, which it seems even in the Senate, Skelos has been very tepid in his opposition. And it really feels like this could be passed through. And indexing the minimum wage, far from an inflationary risk, is a key best practice that even Mitt Romney endorses for making sure the minimum wage doesn't erode. 10 other states have it. It's working successfully there. It would be a great legacy accomplishment for the governor to add with to combine with gay marriage.
And there you have, folks, a short debate on the living wage and minimum wage bills currently up in New York City and New York State. Paul Sahn is legal co-director of the National Employment Law Project. Nicole Gelinas is contributing editor to the Manhattan Institute City Journal. And who knows, she may be running for mayor next year. Well, you're not laughing, Nicole.
No, not me.
that tantalizing little "we'll see," though, definitely the topic of a future conversation, since a lot of observers are saying, well, there is no option to the Democrats in 2013. Anyway, thank you both very much for having this debate.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we have the winner of this year's Pulitzer Prize for Poetry, Brooklyn's own Tracy K. Smith. And did you take her poetry challenge? We'll read some of what you have submitted over the course of the morning, a short poem in the voice of someone in the news lately. Stay with us.